デイビッド・リー・ロスへようこそ。いやらしくって恥ずかしい、でも生きてるって気持ち、覚悟はできてる？Welcome to David Lee Roth. Prepare to feel filthy, ashamed, and completely alive.
We're feeling great here. Special thanks to Chris Gilman and the gang down at Palm West. We're having executive breakfast in here. What do you think of the executive breakfast, Animal?
Oh, man, the potatoes was to die for, man. I love that, man.
Very you know, good.
Yeah. They make some good potatoes. They're not better than mine, but they good, though, you know. Yeah.
Palm West, thank you so, so much. The executive breakfast. It's a Friday morning tradition now. That's at 250 West 50th Street in New York City. Inarguably one of the hottest tourist spots. Actually, I think it's the only tourist spot that you can see from the GPS satellite. I read that. Actually, I saw it on the TV set. Actually, I think I read it on the menu. Palm West, thanks so much, Chris Gilman and everybody, for our executive breakfast. Coming up, see, I've got kind of a spiritual tone here. I've got sort of a mysterious tone, because coming up is Gail St. John. She's the founder of the United States Psychic Detectives, and she's coming. Is she actually on the phone at this point in time? Go ahead, put her on. Gail, it's David Lee. How are you here?
How you doing?
Extraordinary, Gail. Let me give you a little workup here and reacquaint our gang with what's cooking here. Gail and the USPD have been solving crimes for years and have appeared on such TV shows as Court TV's Psychic Detectives and Larry King Lives. Recent cases that Gail and her team have been involved in and have included the Stacey Hendrickson case, the Jesse Jones case, and the recently closed Gehring children, etc. Gail, share with us, what are you working on currently?
Currently, I am working on a case of a missing child. It's been missing for around 10 years, Rachel Mellon.
And how do you pursue a case like that? Are you yourself a psychic?
Yes, I am.
And how did you, first, let's start with you. How did you first realize that you were a psychic?
I was around 4 years old, and I think my first experience was playing with friends out in the yard, turned around and saw their house on fire. Turned around again and it wasn't on fire. I was completely shocked.
Okay, but you're saying that you preceived what was going to happen. You preconceived that this was going to happen, and then did it actually happen?
Yes, it did. Several days later, their house caught fire.
Amazing. And did you have a number of experiences like that, or was that the only one, my dear?
It continued. You know, and eventually I kind of thought I was going crazy, you know, and ended up talking to my mother about it, telling her, and where she, you know, at that point said, oh, well, that's kind of normal for our family.
And does she have these kinds of precognitions as well?
Yes.
Oh, and did she ever share that with you before you had your first experience?
No.
Okay. Now that you have shared with each other that you are both precogs, what experiences did she have that she shared with you?
She was you know, kind of the futuristic things. She would predict things that were going to happen, which seemed, you know, normal at the time. My grandmother was the same way.
And can you control these kinds of precognitions? Can you aim it at something, or does it just come to you inadvertently?
I can pretty much aim it now. I mean, after this many years, you know, I've worked up to that point where I can turn it on, turn it off.
Okay, so now, what was the first police case or the first actual case that you worked on, Gail?
I actually first worked on a case. Oh, I'm trying to think of my first case.
Okay, something like the first case. When did you first start working?
I was about 17 years old, 16 years old.
And did you volunteer to the police department and say, I have precognition abilities here? Did you do something like that?
That particular case, I did.
And what happened to you when you told them this?
They basically told me I was nuts.
Of course they did. And what did you do?
I said, well, okay, but, you know, like, when it happens, then you'll understand what I'm trying to say to you.
Okay, and then, go ahead.
And once it happened, my phone was ringing.
And what exactly was the occurrence? Can you describe that to us?
It had been concerning a murder, and I had discussed with them that there would be another murder occurring, and in what area of their city. and pretty much described the killer to them. And when it happened, like I said, the phone was ringing at that point. They realized I was too far away to be involved, basically, but they wanted to know more.
Okay, and so you actually solved a crime. You had a precognition, and you solved a crime. And when they realized that you had this ability, did they call you back?
Yes, I did, until actually that detective was retired.
Okay, but that was one particular detective, or did the whole force start to ascribe to your abilities?
You know, pretty much it stuck to one detective. You know, you're still stuck in that thing today.
Of course you are, just like anybody who's making a serious contribution, if in fact you are. Now, here in the case of the Gehring children, I think I'm pronouncing that right, Gail and the USPD pinpointed the location for the family who sent volunteer workers to the area. The volunteers located the children there after 2.5 years of law enforcement. Okay, now you say you have, and let me see if I'm getting this correctly, you have volunteers who work with you, Gail?
Volunteers, as in, we do have some people in some areas who are searching for us, but most of the time that falls on the family. You know what I mean? If we can't make it to a certain location.
Okay, and when you get to a certain location, what is the process that you become involved in? Can you describe that to us?
Well, it's pretty much a hands-on. I get down and dirty. I mean, I'm out.
What does
there
that mean? Let's hear it.
I have been through muddy creeks. I have been up mountains. I have, you know, anything it takes to find what I'm looking for, whether it be a piece of evidence or an actual body.
And do you and you need to find something evidentiary in order to have that precognition, or do you just walk around waiting for the spirit to arrive?
Basically, when I get out there and I start on something out there, I already have information ahead of time. So when I get there, I wait for more information, you know, and then when it starts coming in, I'm sort of just keep following the direction. I call it a person's signature.
Okay,
everybody has a signature.
You do it from a signature. You get a piece of signature on a piece of paper, and from that you can discern something that happened in the future that's going to happen in the future or the past?
No, signature is not anything on a piece of paper. Signature is electrical vibration a person leaves behind.
Oh, okay. And what is your rate of success here out of 10 cases that you work on? How many successes might you have?
Around 7 to 8.
That's a pretty darn good rating there. So the question, I guess, that Animal is probably wondering is, how come you don't precognite, if that's even the word? How come you can't have a precognition about winning the lottery?
People ask me that all the time. They always call me up and ask me for the lottery numbers. Hey, if I could do it, I'd do it for myself.
Okay, so you can't receive signature on numbers? Is that what you're saying?
It's not person connected.
Okay, is it animal connected?
You know, well,
because could you go put hands on a racehorse and determine whether or not there's going to be success that day at Belmont?
You know, if there's no human intervention and there's cheating.
Okay, no way. Could you go hands on a jockey and be able to tell a precognitive idea of, is this jockey going to be lucky for me at Belmont?
It's a possibility. I've never really tried it.
Well,
being as human connected, I've never, you know,
okay.
I'm sure I could.
Would you be able to lay hands on to a football coach before the Super Bowl and have some precognition of whether or not this individual is going to be the winner? What if you laid hands on both of the football coaches who are going to be representing up in Detroit for the Super Bowl? Would you be able to determine who the victor would be?
You know, like I said, I haven't tried it, but I suppose it's possible. Anything's possible, but I have not tried it.
Actually, you'd probably be able to lay hands on to both of the coaches and figure out which one hasn't paid his taxes, which one's got got a skeleton in the closet. That's more likely, huh?
Well, that's extremely possible, too, because I've done that to a few people.
Okay, and how did it work out? Did it come out true?
Yeah. They're usually so shocked they can't talk.
Okay, the way you're describing this is this is something that you'd be able to do on television. Have you gone on television and done an encounter like this and delivered a truth, or is this something that you only do behind the scenes as the psychic detectives, Gail?
I was just in Japan. I just got back from Japan last week, and we filmed live.
What did you film live? This is interesting.
We were working on a murder case there. and I needed to figure out the route that the person had been on. And the cameras were following me around live as I worked.
And where and how did you go about figuring out the route? What did the cameras document? Share that with us.
Basically, like what I said, with the signature, what I started out doing is I started going through. Matter of fact, there's a lot of bamboo groves in Japan. And I started going through the, you know, the grove and just picking up the vibration of that person that I was looking for.
And did
and following their trail.
And were you are you able? What is your nationality?
Basically, other than Heinz 57.
So you're a Caucasian. You're a white girl, right?
Yep.
Do you find it easier or more difficult to have a precognition about a Japanese person?
Absolutely not. There's no language barrier, no barriers as far as race.
There's no language barrier in heaven. Do you feel that you're dealing with ghosts, or are you dealing with requisite energy that was left behind? What is your figure on this?
I talk with the victims generally. If I can get a hold of the victims on the other side, I talk to them.
Oh, you talk to the actual victims even though they may have passed into the hereafter?
Right.
How's Jimi Hendrix doing? No, I have a few technical questions.
I work with mostly the murder victims, like in the case of Stacey Hendrickson.
Okay, and this is Stacey Hendrickson, if I'm not mistaken, was the girl in Aruba, correct?
No, she was in Arizona.
Okay, and describe the case, if you would.
Her father had called me, said that she was missing in Arizona. Of course, I'm in Ohio, and asked me if there's anything I could do to help him. He was just desperate. And I said, well, I can try. Well, he came over, and we sat down, and I began to talk. But I didn't tell him everything because, you know, there's a certain point, you know things, but, you know, it's hard to tell the family. It's really difficult.
Okay, I understand this. I also understand that an entire cruise ship was just abducted with something like 115 people on it in the Red Sea, or something coming out of Egypt or whatever. This is a new news-breaking issue here. The boat has just disappeared off the face of the earth. Is this something that you could assist in locating?
Yeah, I believe we probably could.
And what would be the process? What would be your first two steps in solving this issue?
Well, the first thing they need to do is call us.
So you don't volunteer?
We don't take cases anymore. No. We have so many. We are on overload.
Oh, my goodness. So you're talking about police departments that are getting in line to work with you on cases like this?
Well, and families. A lot of families have discovered that, you know, sometimes they're just not solved.
Okay, and what about the gal who disappeared in Aruba? What was her name just recently? It was about 6 months ago. But she disappeared in Aruba, remember? This was all over the news, etc. Is that a case that you would have been able to assist in?
I'm sure we could have. Yeah, we weren't asked. I had several people say, why don't you, you know, go after that case? I'm sort of like, well, we're on case overload right now.
Okay, and do you charge by the hour or by the case? How do you make a living here, Gail?
We never charge.
Oh, you never charge. So this is a complete contribution. That's interesting.
Right.
What
we
do you actually
only hope for donations to, and that's to help, families who can't afford to pay for our gas or motel when we get there.
Okay, so what do you actually do for a living then? How do you pay your mortgage?
I'm actually in the vending business.
You're in the vending business?
Yep.
How do you mean?
Vending machines.
Okay, and where do you work out of? What city do you usually work out of, Gail?
I'm out of the Oregon, Ohio area.
Okay, and you find enough time in your off time to be able to assist on these kinds of cases, huh? You spend a lot of calories, it sounds like.
I don't know if I want to say I have off time. I'm usually driving and talking about a case in between working.
Is this ever going to become a full-time occupation for you, do you think? Is that caseload building up like that?
Well, I'd say it probably has been for the last 30 years. I mean, I pretty much do it 8 hours a day.
My goodness. Now, how long have you been actually doing this? How many years, Gail?
Approximately 30 years.
Okay, I'm talking to Gail St. John, and she is the founder of the United States Psychic Detectives, and she's been talking about a number of cases that she has been working on and a number of cases that a lot of us are familiar with. I asked her the obvious questions. How come you can't precognite the... I don't even know if that's a word. How come you can't have a precognition about the lottery or whatever? But I think I understand what you're talking about. I don't know. Do you believe in ghosts?
To a certain extent, yeah. I would enjoy going to hauntings. I have been to things that are haunted.
You sound like somebody who likes the mysterious. If a flying saucer came down, would you get on and go?
Oh, I'd probably be the first one there.
Hell, I'd go. Thanks so much for calling us. Gail St. John. She's the founder of the United States Psychic Detectives, I think. Roth Radio, don't go away. We'll be right back after this. Yo!
David Lee Roth in the mornings.
Roth Radio, I'm getting a premonition. I see a huge cloud enveloping me. I see a huge dark apparition reaching. Oh, that's animal. Well, I'm not a precog. Somebody swiped Paris's diaries. I think I know where they are. Well, at least I think I know what was in them. Roth Radio, 866-313-3733. Is today Groundhog Day?
No, yesterday. That was yesterday.
That was yesterday. Now, let me see if I get this right.
Postcognition.
Okay, wait. Yeah, I have postcognition here. I suspect that this is one of my abilities here, because let me see if I got this right. Groundhog Day is when Jesus came, when they rolled away the stone and Jesus came out, and if he sees his shadow, then winter.
Then we go to heaven.
That's Easter. I always get them mixed up. it's my lack of religious upbringing. Hey, we got another great cartoon here in page 6. I got the groundhog looking at his shadow going, wow, it's going to be a long winter. And I got a soldier looking at a shadow way longer than the groundhog's labeled Iraq. And the soldier's going, it's going to be a long war. Are we making fun of groundhogs?
Yeah.
See, now you're gonna have PETA. I think Pamela Anderson is actually in town for this. Actually, she's going to be knocking on the door. We're going to get everybody loving us. Anyway, celebutard Paris Hilton has been victimized once again.
Oh, God.
This is a girl who can't get out of her own way. Hilton, whose Beverly Hills house was burglarized 2 years ago, was recently moving to new digs in order to make the upheaval easier. She had her entire house packed up and sent to storage, but thieves somehow made off with a lot of stuff. They took, like, computers and a whole bunch of stuff. They also took her diary. Who keeps a diary today? What kind of a celebutard would ever keep a diary in the age of the internet? Something in print? She probably even had it on a CD-ROM. Am I going to be able to read her diary on my telephone on the way home here? I hope so. Let me see if I can precognitive. I'm going to see if I can become precognitive here. Let me see. No, I'll never be in Paris. Special thanks to the Palm West here for executive breakfast. Chris Gilman, the manager, and all the gang down there. The Palm West on 250 West 50th Street. Red meat, large and in charge. Maybe this will help my cognitive abilities here. It's certainly not going to help me locate Paris Hilton's lost diaries. Here's another one. Which actress who voiced a popular cartoon series, this comes out of page 6, which actress who voiced a popular cartoon series is said to be a slam dunk in the sack for Hollywood party boys who prefer a certain kind of sex act? I think I know her. Who do you think it is? What actress has done a cartoon voice who, I don't know, does she have a tattoo back there that says, do not back up, severe tire damage? This is how rumors get started. Roth Radio, David Lee Roth, large and in charge. Uh-oh, another celeb breakup. Heather Locklear snuffed out any prayers that Bon Jovi rocker Richie Sambora had of keeping their marriage together. How did we know that?
Train wreck. I thought
they were going to do pretty good.
Well, they were doing pretty good, but is she not a specialist? What other rock stars has she been with? She's been with
Tommy Lee.
Tommy Lee.
She was with Tommy Lee, right?
Married.
Oh, she married him?
Yeah, married years ago.
And wasn't she with somebody else? Wasn't she somebody else in the rock and roll community? So what, did she work her way up or down from Tommy? She married up, huh? Married down? Anyway, what happens to Richie now? Does his songwriting suffer?
Should get better.
Well, he'll have more lyrical content.
More lyrical stuff.
It'll be a little more unpredictable lyrically here, but she's like a specialist, no? Do you think she's now going to wind up with the gardener or the pool guy or her trainer or what? Or
is it going to hire David Lee Roth's guitar players available?
Oh, man.
Maybe that's what she's looking for. There are specialists out there. I had a guy working for me once who only dated Japanese girls with the same length black hair, the same kind of body, whatever. And he'd say, hey, could you meet my new girlfriend? And you would think that it was 2 weeks ago. It was the exact same way. He's a specialist here. Anyway, Heather Locklear, she's out in the, she's in the fast track again. She's back on the fast lane, right? Do we care? It wouldn't be in the paper if we didn't. Hey, Heather, if everything is headed your way, you're probably facing the wrong lane, baby. But Tommy Lee, what was he facing? Tommy Lee, this is another news story. Tommy Lee nearly got duped into hooking up with a transsexual while partying in Toronto the other night. The renowned Babe Bagger was hanging out at the Ultra Supper Club when he called over he-she stunner Nina, and she sat on his lap and shared a few shots of tequila. She downed hers quickly while he sipped slowly. She wasted no time, they said, in calling him a P-dash-dash-dash-dash-Y, whatever. He apologized, telling her, I've been drinking tequila since 7, and then he got up and walked away, and when she attempted to follow him, the bodyguard stopped. Any of you guys ever have an experience like that? You ever have somebody that you thought was a girl turn out to be a guy? Animal? You ever
That's happened several times, man, in my experience.
Please reacquaint us.
Okay, well, I'm not going to call his name. A friend of mine just told me a story yesterday that he was kicking it with this girl, and then she wanted him to come over and kick it with him and his girlfriend, right? So he goes over there, and then she takes her clothes off. Everything's fine. And then her girlfriend takes her clothes off, and she had both parts. And he like, whoa, I got to get up out of here. This just happened like a couple of days ago.
This just
too.
Happened in an R. Kelly song that's up for a Grammy nomination. Isn't this The Closet, parts 1 through 12 or something?
Yeah. But it happened to me when I was in college. You know, this girl kept coming at me, but I was kind of skeptical because her hands was kind of big and she, you know, and her feet was big and smaller shoes and stuff. And then he said, you do know what you're getting, don't you? And I was like, no, not really. He said, well, hey, me and you both stand up and take a leak. I said, okay, that's cool. You know, I ain't with that, you know. So, I just go find me a girl. But he was cool. You know, he said, well, that ain't your thing. You know, I'm cool, too. I said, all right, you go. You know, do your thing, and I'm going to play tennis, man. You know?
This is an occurrence that happens. Yeah. This is an occurrence that happens a lot. This has happened to me a couple of times, too. Both times I asked, though, I kept saying, are you a girl? Because they were too good at it. You follow the whatever it was, the body language or the makeup or whatever was too good to be believed. But even then, I was like on the fence. Is this really a guy? Is this really a girl? And of course, they're never going to answer you.
Never.
With the correct answer there.
Because now they can get rid of their Adam's apple now. But how you pick up on what they are, they try too much to be like a girl. That's a dead giveaway. When I'm talking to a chick or something before I got married, if she like try to be too much like a girl, I know right then it was a guy.
Yeah, what, you got an experience with this, Hutch?
Oh, yeah. Well, kind of experience. Miami, okay? Biscayne Boulevard. You drive down Biscayne Boulevard. And that's where pretty much there's a good kind of half a mile stretch where you can pick up anything. But out of that half a mile, there's about maybe 150 yards of what looks like really, really tall, good-looking women.
Especially if you've been drinking, Hutch?
Allegedly.
Okay. Go ahead. Finish the story.
That's pretty much the story. I drove down there past it one night, never actually made any contact, and that's the honest truth. But by golly, you would have done. I tell you, very easily.
Well, this is a common occurrence, evidently, because of Tommy Lee. These are probably the only people Tommy hasn't slept with here, huh? He apologized, telling her, I've been drinking tequila since 7 a.m. Things were going just swimmingly when somebody took it upon themselves to tell Tommy Lee's bodyguard about the nip and tuckness of it all. Didn't somebody Arquette, the transsexual or whatever, just had a reality series canceled or whatever. This was just in the news just recently. We talked about it the other day. What is Arquette's brother, who is a transvestite or something?
He just dresses her up like a girl, I think. I'm not sure.
Well, isn't that the definition?
It doesn't mean they changed their sexual organs.
Cross-dresser.
Cross-dresser.
Whatever.
Same thing, though. You know what
same
we mean.
Ballpark.
Yeah. I don't got to look under the hood to know it's a Volkswagen, okay? Anyway, he had a great name. I memorized the name. Eva Destruction. Hey, it takes all kinds to make a planet, doesn't it? Roth Radio, 866-313-3733. Hey, somebody's complaining about Paris. Look at this. Matt, talk to me. Roth Radio, you're in.
Very cool.
Go ahead, Matt.
Hey, Dave, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, it's great to hear from you, man. I've been a Van Halen, well, forget about that, a Van Halen fan for years, a major fan of yours. I speak to my friend Tommy, too. We're so psyched when you're on the radio. Bottom line is, with all due respect, Paris Hilton and people like this are not worth discussing with the shape of the world at this point. Why do we still give her the time of day?
Because it's a reflection on the tribe. I could care less about Paris Hilton unless she's naked with me in the sleeping bag. But otherwise, anytime you discuss Paris Hilton, you're discussing our values, our priorities, what we find entertaining in the community at large. And the reason I bring it up is because she's in virtually every newspaper. Her pictures dominate the covers of most magazines today. Anytime you discuss her, you're actually discussing the culture's pros and cons. Agreed or disagree?
I agree. Can I ask one thing?
Certainly.
Please give a shout out to my friend Tommy. He's a big big fan of yours for years. Saw you at the Malibu a few years back. And also, I grew up in North Hollywood in 1980. I was into the new wave punk scene, and I had to contend with all the surfers kicking my butt because you were so big.
Well, you know what? I'm going to have to give you the shout out. Shout outs to Tommy. I understand Tommy just got into a serious operation, right? Shout-outs to Tommy and my brother there on the phone. God bless you all. Yeah, Roth Radio, 866-313-3733. Have you ever had a Tommy Lee kind of experience like this? I don't know. Dial us in. It's becoming common, okay? And how many actors have to get pulled over with one of these characters in the car? What's going on with this culture here? Anyways, moving along, something a little bit more important. The ship with 1,400 sinks in the Red Sea. Lifeboats, survivors are reported near where the ship is seen last. I got to read through this before we get to this. Do we have a song? You want to go to a song?
You know what? Let me cue up some move for you. Yeah.
Groovy, baby. 866-313-3733. Roth Radio. We'll be right back after this. Go ahead, Hutch. Swing it on there.
Let the wind blow you out of my memory.
You are tuned directly to David Lee Roth. How about a little fire, Scarecrow? Sie haben sich direkt zu David Lee Roth dazugeschaltet. Wie wäre es mit etwas Feuer, Vogelscheuche?
All right, we're going to the Mideast. Roth Radio, jump on the love train, 866-313-3733. I want to re-solicit what we were arguing about earlier this morning here, because I know the audience has changed here. If you're familiar with this cartoon that showed up, I believe it would have been Page Six from Cagle, one of my favorite cartoonists. He does political cartoons, all right? And this is the cartoon where it depicted the soldier with the amputated arms and the amputated legs, with the supposed government official looking upon him with a clipboard and declaring in so many words, you're not hurt so bad, you're just battle hardened, okay? Weigh in on this. 866-313-3733. Talk to me about the Mideast and let's see if you can agree or disagree on this. Is that a reasonable cartoon? Is that a justifiable use of a picture of a soldier, or is that way out of line? 866-313-3733. Do we belong there? And if we don't belong there, then what is this cartoon reflecting on? 866-313-3733. Animal, what do you think? Was that an acceptable cartoon? Did you see the cartoon? You know what I'm talking about? Go ahead.
Yeah, I saw the cartoon, and you made a statement earlier about if it was a picture, how would people react to it. But I'm pretty sure the artist might have got the idea from a picture he saw, because like myself, I'm an artist. I can take a picture of you and turn it into anything I want, you know. So I figured he might have you know, come across some photographs to come up with that idea, and he tried to make it funny, and it kind of like backfired on him or something.
I don't
think
he meant it to be funny at all, Animal. I think he meant to shock people.
He definitely did that.
Oh, yeah. And I think he meant to shock them into thinking about an issue that is really important today, taking care of our soldiers before, during, and after.
Yeah.
And he used the most shocking image available to his imagination at the time in order to draw the attention here. Now, I've had soldiers call up and say they're insulted by this.
Yeah.
And go ahead.
And a lot of, you know where I work at and stuff in Hollywood, and all those homeless guys out there that I be like kicking it with, they Vietnam veterans and stuff, and they homeless on the street, and nobody does nothing for them. You know, I just thought they were just guys didn't want to work or whatever. And then they, so when they come back, they get hooked on drugs. That's the only thing that could ease their pain and stuff when the government wouldn't help them. So now they spaced out on drugs and stuff, and that's the only time they have any kind of peace or relaxation is when they high and stuff.
Okay, now I'm wondering if we had a cartoon that depicted a homeless Vietnam vet being looked at by a congressman with a clipboard making a derisive comment, if the homeless would rise up against it. Or would people who are involved with supporting the homeless and taking care of the homeless, would they think that they were making fun of the homeless? Or would they say, hey, finally, somebody finally called some attention to an existing problem? I'm not going to weigh in either way until I get some calls.
Yeah, probably go either way, 50-50 probably.
866-313-3733. Go ahead. She's on. Nancy, you're in.
Hi, Dave. How you doing? It's Nancy from Long Branch.
Go ahead, Nancy.
I just want to make you aware that in that political cartoon you were talking about, the doctor being depicted is actually Rumsfeld.
Okay. Well, whoever it is, it certainly indicates a position of governmental authority. What's your take on the cartoon?
I don't think there's any problem with it. I mean, we've had a long history in this country of parody and sarcasm in the newspaper. I mean, look what happened with, Larry Flint going against Jerry Falwell. And the Supreme Court ruled that, hey, you put yourself in the public eye and you can be parodied.
I think that probably using twisted left-of-center agonizing humor may arguably be one of the best ways of effecting social change. Do you agree or disagree?
I agree with you.
Excellent.
Absolutely.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So you have no problem with this cartoon?
No, I'm not at all. I mean, because they're saying, Donald Rumsfeld and the Bush administration is trying to look at it and say, oh, no, we're not really having problems in Iraq. We're not having any problems at all. These are just battle-hardened soldiers.
I think that I agree with you 100% and that the target of this cartoon was not the soldiers at all. The target of the cartoon is the administration or the individuals of authority who are seeking to demonize and make little of the catastrophes that these poor soldiers, these guys and gals, are enduring over there. Thanks for calling. 866-313-3733. Go ahead. Aim another one at me, Hutch. Roth Radio, you're talking to me. Hit it.
Hey, I just wanted to call in and say that I agree with the caller you just had on. The cartoon was not directed at the troops. It was directed at Rumsfeld specifically and his administration. That's just been completely mischaracterizing the war and what's been going on in Iraq.
Why do you think soldiers are rising up against it? Because we had some fellas from the military who shared with us that they thought it was a terrible idea and they agonized over that. Why do you think they're responding like that?
Well, I think they're missing the point. I mean, they're seeing, you know, the obviously the soldier in the bed, and they're identifying with that. And I think, you know, that gets a very emotional response, especially when you know somebody who's been injured or, you know, been amputated or something like that because of battle wounds. And, you know, that they are identifying with that. And I don't think they're seeing past that. They're not seeing that, you know, that he's not taking aim at the soldiers. Rather, it's the guy standing next to the soldier. And, you know, it's. I think it's just a very emotional thing, and it's hard to see past your emotions sometimes.
I think that if you use humor, then you start to invest yourself into the community as opposed to trying to preach a civics lesson, as opposed to trying to teach people politics, that a simple picture that defies even language, you need not even really read the caption to know what the content of that cartoon is.
Exactly.
And again, most cartoons, the best ones, aren't really funny. They make you think.
Absolutely.
Thanks for calling. 866-313-3733. Call me up. Somebody take the opposing view here. We're on davidleeroth.com. You're welcome to email us. We're worldwide here, Roth Radio, New York. Go ahead, Mike. You're in.
Hi, David. Big fan. Thanks for letting me call talk about this. First of all, I think that the comic strips is just an speech, whether it be actual humor or whether it be like a political satire or what have you. And I have to agree, I cannot take the opposing side. I think that the comic strip was definitely meant to be a jab at the government and has nothing to do with offending the soldiers whatsoever. And any soldiers who are offended are missing the point. And to further illustrate that, there's a lot of proof that the government just flat out doesn't care too much about the soldiers, despite the rhetoric otherwise.
You know, it brings to my mind one of my favorite political jokes from way back when, during the Vietnam era, when the joke was, wow, how'd you wind up in the hospital, soldier? Well, I was on one side of the road, and the other guys were on the other side of the road, and I yelled, to hell with Vietnam. And the other guy yelled, to hell with President Johnson. And we were shaking hands in the middle of the road, and a tank ran over us. Roth Radio, thanks for calling. 866-313-3733. Sergio, you're on. Go, Serge.
Hey, what's up, Diamond?
You, Bubba. What's cooking?
Listen, soldiers have been getting crapped on since the beginning of, this country got founded.
I agree.
And they never did anything about it. They say, like, oh, we're fighting a war we don't believe in. Like, for example, the MTA, when they don't get what they want, they go on strike. Soldiers, they get sent to halfway around the world just to die for something they don't believe in, and they don't do nothing about it.
And so you're in support of this cartoon and the topic that it suggests?
Absolutely.
Thank you very much. 866-313-3733. Hit the next one, Hutch. You know the routine here. Joe, Roth Radio, you're in. Hit it.
Hey, how's it going, David?
Excellent, Joe.
It's obviously effective because you're sitting here talking about it and you have other people talking about it.
Oh, yeah. That's the whole point, is to make a rallying cry that at least encourages dissension and argument. That's what gets things done. I don't know that it's going to get done the way I want, but damn it, now we're finally talking about a subject that's very, very close to my heart. I got a lot of soldiers and friends who are listening to us on the stream right now. One of my friends is Colonel Hastings, who is in charge of the combat medical facility down in Fort Sam Houston in San Antonio, okay? I'm very, very aware of the horrifying injuries and the catastrophic futures that a lot of these kids and their commanding officers are enduring there. Nobody understands this better than I do. And I also understand, coming from showbiz, that you gotta knock people in the nose sometimes. And the best way to do that probably doesn't involve a fist. It involves a little embarrassment. That's what humor does. It humiliates somebody into action. Do you agree or disagree?
Absolutely, I couldn't agree more, but my biggest problem with the war is that we've already spent over $300 billion there, and I just saw in the news today that Bush is getting ready to go to Congress to ask for another $120 billion.
Well,
we can't rebuild New Orleans. We have a lot of problems in our own country. We don't have health care here for everybody.
I agree with you, and the issue today is health care, specifically to the soldiers. How about taking care of the soldiers who are already there and the soldiers who are going to be shipped home in different pieces coming from there? That's the issue today. Thanks for calling in. Christian, talk to me about the cartoon in the military. You're on Roth Radio. Go.
How you doing, Dave? Longtime fan of Van Halen. I'm a veteran of Foreign Wars. I was a prisoner of war, and I've been shot.
Oh, hold on. Slow down. I want to hear your history. How old are you, my friend?
I am 33 years old.
And where were you involved in the military?
I was in Bosnia, Haiti, Desert Storm, and Somalia.
Wow, you're a decorated guy. What branch of the service were you in?
Marine Corps.
Wow, okay. And what rank did you obtain?
I was an E6, Staff Sergeant.
Okay, that's a serious biz. We're going to listen very carefully to you, Christian. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, I personally take offense to it because it is showing the government's disregard for its veterans, and the fact that somebody wants to make a joke about it in a cartoon. Not that I'm missing the point. I understand the point, but I do take offense to it.
Why specifically do you take offense to it, Christian?
Well, because it's showing our own government's disregard for its veterans. The fact that they put these young men and women out there, and I personally am going through like a constant battle with just trying to get benefits from the VA, whether it's medical care. I still undergo surgeries from where I was wounded, and I'm recovering from a surgery right now.
And isn't that the subject specifically that this illustration addresses? Your difficulty, your turmoil, and the reality of your future is a difficult, crummy one because of characters like the guy with the clipboard depicted in that cartoon. Isn't that who they're pointing the finger at and on your behalf saying, wake up, on terms of this guy's behalf? No? You disagree?
Well, I agree with that, David, but and I kind of disagree. I disagree in the sense that it's in the satire cartoon. I don't get it. I mean, there are much bigger venues or views to bring these points out, not just in a political cartoon on page six.
I disagree with you. I think one of the most effective way of confronting idiots is punching them in the nose with humor. Nothing upsets the big monkey in the tree more than being humiliated. There are people you can drop a bomb on, and they're not going to figure that. You know those kinds of people. But you make fun of those same kind of small, weenie clowns, then yeah, they're going to be kicked into action because they're afraid they're going to lose their jobs. And maybe there is no other way. Perhaps that cartoonist thought of it that way. The only tool that he had was some larcenous left-hand sense of humor to wake people up to it. And here we are. All the morning shows are talking about this now. All of the news is finally talking about this. This issue is no longer relegated to the Discovery Channel one night a week on Thursdays. Do you not appreciate that?
I do, David, but to use a veteran in a comical satire, I don't appreciate it.
I didn't see anything even remotely comical about it. Because it was a drawing does not make it a funny cartoon. Do you agree or disagree?
I agree, but it's still satire. It's not funny, but it's still satire.
Satire based on the characters who put that guy in the bed and then left him to be there. You know what? I like the way you speak. Give us a call again sometime, Christian. Thank you very much. 866-313-3733. Hit the next one, Hutch. Yo, Roth Radio, you're in. Get it.
How you doing, Dave?
Excellent. Where are you calling from, friend?
I'm actually calling from Long Island on my way to work.
Okay. What's your take on this?
Well, actually, I'm a fire service Marine. I got out in, I was in from 93 to 97.
Okay.
And I kind of take offense to this.
Why do you take offense to this? Share with us.
Because our boys, my friends, are over there right now. If they pick up this paper, they see this cartoon, this political satire. You know, Rumsfeld is not against our troops and say, oh, you know, it is kind of a parody, a satire, a comical piece. From the writer,
it certainly makes fun of the Rumsfeld character and his lack of providing characters like yourself with the proper body armor, the proper plating on the sides of the Humvees, the proper kinds of training for clearing houses in the urban environment and taking care of folks much like yourself who come back
offended,
damaged.
I think he's offended because they're putting down Rumsfeld as opposed to all the politics.
Is that the case, my friend? Because we're putting down Rumsfeld?
That's a negative. I wanted to just say that point. But I was saying, our boys over there, our boys over in Iraq, in Afghanistan, if they look at these cartoons, the biggest problem that I had, I was a sergeant when I got out, the biggest problem was keeping my troops motivated. We were out in the field, we were out in Norway, we were out in Iberia, is keeping them motivated. Everything got them down.
I understand what you're saying.
And if they get a hold of this paper, they get a hold of this, they're reading it, it's just another thing, another piece of... wood on the fire.
What would be a more appropriate way of taking on this issue, do you think?
I think lobbying, you know what I mean? You as a voter, me as a voter, lobbying for our troops, in support of our troops, not showing, you know, some mother who had her son quadruple amputee see this article and read it and get sad. Lobbying against, I agree, it raises discussion. But I think it's gone about the wrong way.
Okay, well then we'll take it as a plus and a minus. I'm going to go with what you say here. In fact, if this is going to upset some of our guys and gals in uniform, then I'm with you. Morale is a major, major issue, and it's probably the one major thing that contributes to survivability. Agreed? But in terms of this cartoon drawing a lot of attention to a major, major issue, finally, I've been trumpeting this for my entire radio career. All 4 weeks of it. Don't go away. We'll be back on Monday.
Yeah, okay.
David Lee Roth, weekday mornings.